Good afternoon. On Juno Afternoon today, we'll talk with Angela Chapin about the Alaska Military Youth Academy. Heather Parker from the Learning Connection will talk about tonight's naturalization and immigration information session. We'll talk to Jill Weitz, whose team is one of five finalists selected by Outdoor Magazine for an adventure grant. And we'll learn about parenting workshops called Love and Logic with Jennifer Walker. All that, the Writer's Almanac, music, and more on Juno Afternoon coming up.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Today we're focusing on Indian education. We begin with a report released recently in Education Week. It shows high school graduation rates are on the rise in the United States, but Native students are still less likely to graduate than their peers. Christine Trudeau has more.
The report showed that nearly 75% of high school students in the U.S. graduated in 2010, but the numbers aren't the same for every group. About 80% of white students earned a high school diploma. On average, 68% of Latino students graduated, which is up 5% from 2009. African American students also graduated at higher rates in 2010, but only 51% of Native American students finished high school that year. Rashawn Biddle with the National Indian Education Association says graduation rates are just the beginning.
Even when they make it out of high school, they're not necessarily prepared for college and career success.
Biddle cites cultural displacement, poverty, teachers that lack cultural competence, and not incorporating Native languages into curriculum as factors that may contribute to low graduation rates for Native American and Alaska Native students. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
New Mexico's congressional delegation is working to raise the number of Native students who earn a high school diploma. As Tristan Autone reports, the U.S. lawmakers are pushing legislation with an emphasis on language preservation and increased funding.
In order to improve Native American education, proponents of the recently introduced Build Act are pushing to secure more money for Native students in schools, improving training programs for educators who teach in Indian country, and heavily investing in curriculum that incorporates and promotes indigenous languages. New Mexico Congressman Ben Ray Lujan says the bill could help to curb staggering dropout rates among Native American students while protecting tribal sovereignty.
One thing that we're very aware of and afraid of is once that religion and tradition and culture and language is lost, then those that object to the protections of living up to the trust responsibilities with tribes could walk away from them, and we don't want that to happen.
Lujan says legislation like the No Child Left Behind Act, as well as efforts to eradicate indigenous languages through education, have not helped to improve sagging graduation rates among the nation's Native American population. In Albuquerque, I'm Tristan Autone.
Many educators say students often lose what they've learned during the summer break. But as John Michelson reports, a program in Minnesota is helping prevent learning loss through a summer program for American Indian youth.
The American Indian Math Project is an after-summer school program through the Minneapolis School District and the Division of Indian Work. Director of Youth Leadership Development, Louise Mattson, says it combines Native American culture and student engagement.
And then a lot of what we do when we teach that way is very experiential and hands-on.
And Mattson explains that to best prepare the students for the workforce of tomorrow, the focus is on the so-called STEM curriculum.
So science, technology, engineering, and math, I mean, they're all related. But as far as engaging students, it's very nice to incorporate all those, and especially in a summer school setting where you can do a lot of environmental education.
And Mattson says another reason behind the program's success is that much of the staff is from the local Native American community.
So very close relationships with the students, which is really important, and so that I think helps keep the kids in the program, keeps them engaged as well.
The American Indian Math Project serves about 40 students, grades 5 through 8. John Michelson reports.
During this month in 2008, Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper officially apologized to former students of Indian residential schools on behalf of the government. Harper said students were removed from their homes and assimilated into the dominant culture.
Today we recognize that this policy of assimilation was wrong, has caused great harm, and has no place in our country.
Many former students say they were emotionally, physically, and sexually abused at the church-run, government-funded schools. The schools were operated for more than a century. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Juno employers, do you want to decrease employee turnover, lower health care costs, and improve your bottom line? Supporting breastfeeding women in the workplace makes it easy for new mothers to come back to work. A support program can be simple and can benefit your business as well as your employees. Contact a workplace breastfeeding consultant for a free consultation at 500-8871 or JunoBreastfeedingAlliance.org. Sponsored by Juno Family Health and Birth Center and Search.
Looking at the weather, shifting to mostly cloudy beginning tonight with a slight chance of rain. That is the forecast for the next 5 days. We do expect highs tomorrow around 70 and then on Friday dropping down to the mid-60s to about 70. And over the weekend, it looks like the temperatures will stay in the mid-60s with just a chance of rain. Next is Juno Afternoon. Our first guest this afternoon is Angela Chapin of the Alaska Military Youth Academy. Angela, you're on the air now.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us today. I know you're in Anchorage right now, but I would like to find out, what will the Alaska Military Youth Academy be doing in Juneau? It's next week that the program will be visiting. Is that correct?
Yes. Next Wednesday night, we'll be at the downtown library from 5:30 to 7:30. And the orientation will be open to any youth, parents, mentors, so anyone in the community that's interested in learning more about our program. We'll take the first 50 people because that's all it can hold. But I'm hoping to strike some interest in Juneau.
So the name of the program, Alaska Military Youth Academy, explains somewhat the purpose of the program. But give us the snapshot of the academy and how it got started. And who would you say would be an Alaskan youth who would best benefit from that program?
Well, we are a quasi-military program, which means we use the military structure and discipline. And the purpose originally, when it was funded through the National Guard, was to combat dropout rates. And so ideally, we're looking for youth 16 to 18 who have either withdrawn from school, whether that's high school or GED program, or they're behind in credits. And typically, those are the youth that we're getting. At the rate they're going, they're not in line to graduate with their peers. And what we do in the 22 weeks that they live on our campus is they can earn 7 high school credits, and they can also take the GED exams and earn their GED. So it's a great way for them to catch up and get back to where they need to be to finish up their traditional high school diploma if that's what they wish to do.
You said the program is 22 weeks. When are the admission periods? I assume that one is now. When does the next program actually begin?
We run 2 cycles per year. So they're always about April 1st and October 1st. It always depends on when the Mondays fall. But this next cycle will begin on October 1st. And the residential portion is 22 weeks. But we also do have a 12-month follow-up period for each cycle, where the youth go back into their communities, and we expect them to be productive members, which means for 30 hours a week, they're either enrolled in school, working, or volunteering.
And what if they don't?
Well, there's nothing we can really do if they don't. We just highly encourage them, and that's part of the program and part of the commitment that they make when they come to us. And most of our youth do follow through, whether they're reporting it or we find out through their mentor, which is part of our program as well, or their parents. A lot of them do go back to school. Some of them go on to higher education, end up going to college. A lot go to work. And we have some who end up doing subsistence or volunteer work. And on average, we have 80% of our youth are doing that.
What's the cost to a family to if they are accepted to the youth academy?
This is the best part. We are tuition free. It does cost about $18,000 to put a youth through our program, but the only cost to the parents or the family is the cost of the packing list, which, you know, if they're accepted, we like them to bring some items with them. But even with that, if the families can't afford them or find them if they're located in rural Alaska, then they are provided while they're there. And for our youth that are off the road system, we actually pay for their travel into Anchorage.
So I assume this is a residential program where you have barracks or dorms for the youth to stay.
Yes. We're located on J-Bear, Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, and the youth do stay there for this 22 weeks minus one pass each cycle that they have to go home.
How large is each freshman class, I'll call it that entry group that begins in April or October? How many youth will be accepted, and how many youth will finish?
We can take up to 250 youth per cycle. We don't always hit that many. Last cycle, we started with 204. We're down to 176. It depends. Each cycle is a little bit different. We're a challenging program, so about 25% of our youth end up leaving in the first few weeks of our program. We try to keep them there. In this cycle, we did a much better job of retaining them. We only lost about 12%. But it's a choice, and part of our program is it's a volunteer, and I think a lot of people hear Military Youth Academy, so they think it's something the parents can just make their kids do. And we're not like that at all. The youth have to volunteer. So every day they're at our program, they are making that choice to stay. And as most of us know, the best change comes when the person who wants the change is invested in it. So I would say we lose about 30% of our youth at the program. So they won't all make it to graduation.
And that primarily has to do with the rigorousness of the program, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's nothing there that a youth cannot do, but it comes to the point where it's something they don't want to do anymore. Every once in a while there's injuries or, you know, family emergencies, those kind of situations where the youth leave because of those.
Well, Angela, thank you for being able to join us. I would like to share with you that KTOO FM had as an intern a young man who graduated from the Alaska Military Youth Academy and who came back to Juneau and recommitted to getting his full high school diploma. He had gotten a GED, and he decided to get the diploma. And as part of our efforts in encouraging youth to complete high school, he received a paid internship here at KTOO, and we had a great experience with this young man. So thank you for what you do, and you'll be here next Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Downtown Library to talk about the 22-week program at the Alaska Military Youth Academy in which youth can earn up to 7 credits and or a GED. Thank you, Angela. Glad to have you with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
And here's the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 19th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of the writer Tobias Wolfe, born in Birmingham, Alabama, 1945. He joined the Army, served in Vietnam, returned to the United States, and supported himself with odd jobs. Then in 1976, the Atlantic Monthly accepted his story, Smokers. It was the first story he ever submitted for publication. He went on to write several collections of stories, but he's best known for This Boy's Life, a memoir about his childhood. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed by the United States Senate on this date. It's often viewed as the most important United States civil rights legislation since the Reconstruction, and it prohibited discrimination based on race, color, religion, or national origin in employment, voting, and the use of public facilities. First proposed in 1963 by President Kennedy, it failed to pass, but Lyndon Johnson put forward a more robust version the following year. It faced a long battle in Congress, including a 57-day filibuster, but eventually the Senate voted to end the filibuster, and the act was passed with a vote of 71-29. And it's the birthday of mathematician, physicist, and theologian Blaise Pascal, born in Clermont-Ferrand, France, in 1623. A child prodigy, by the time he was 19, he had already perfected a mechanical calculator. And in the field of physics, he discovered that air has weight. He conducted experiments to prove that vacuums could exist, and that led him to formulate the same hydraulic principle that is used today in such devices as syringes, automobile brakes, and aircraft controls. In mathematics, he founded the theory of probabilities and developed an early form of calculus. Pascal spent much of his life in conflict between science and religion, and he was one of the first philosophers to seriously question the existence of God. But in 1654, he experienced a revelation, the account of which he carried sewn into his coat lining until his death. He came to the conclusion that there was no science to prove God exists. Instead, humans must rely on their faith. He produced two great works of religious philosophy, Le Provençal and Ponce. Blaise Pascal, who said, "The heart has its reasons, which reason knows nothing of." And here's a poem by Mae Swenson, "Distance and a Certain Light." Distance and a certain light makes anything artistic, it doesn't matter what. From an airplane, all that rigid splatter of the Bronx becomes organic, logical as web or beehive. Chunks of decayed cars in junkyards, garbage scows, nimble roaches on the Harlem, herds of stalled manure yellow boxes on twisting reaches of rails are punched clean and sharp as ingots in the ignition of the sun. Rubbish becomes engaging shape. You only have to get a bead on it, the right light filling the corridor of your view. A gob of spit under a microscope, fastidious in structure as a crystal. No contortion without intention, and nothing ugly. In any random, sprawling, decomposing thing is the charming string of its history and what it will be next. A poem by Mae Swenson, "Distance and a Certain Light," from her collected poems, published by the Library of America and used here by permission on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Do you enjoy folk music? Looking for something fun to do on a Wednesday night? Then tune in to Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7. Hi, this is Mike Sicarius, host of Friends and Neighbors. Together we'll explore and enjoy the breadth of folk music, from blues to ballads to banjos and much more. So kick back and relax this Wednesday evening with Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling. Tonight, Katie Bosler will be hosting Stormy Weather at 9, and her theme is islands, speaking of folk music. We just heard from Billy Collins, America's former poet laureate, on the Writer's Almanac. Our next guest is Heather Parker. She's with the Learning Connection, and she's going to give us some information about a naturalization and immigration information session this evening. Why don't we get the details out of the way in terms of those specific times and place, Heather, and then let's talk a little bit about the program itself and what someone could expect.
Very good. Thank you for having me. Tonight, from 5:30 until 6:30 at the Learning Connection at 210 Ferry Way, there will be a naturalization information session. an officer from Anchorage. Alaska only has one U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services office in Alaska, and that's in Anchorage. We have an officer who's here in town for this week, and she'll be offering the presentation and will be available for questions.
So that's a really key opportunity. It's not like this officer is frequently in our part of the state.
That's correct. She's only here 1 to 2 times a year, and the person who's giving the presentation is the actual person who people would interview with for their citizenship test.
So just for clarity, Ferryway is across from Marine Park.
That's correct.
And
it's
connects,
downtown.
Right. Okay. Just so folks, it's the Southeast Regional Resource Center.
And if people have questions, they can call 586-5718.
5718. Thank you. So you talked about this is the actual person who would do the interview for citizenship. What does that entail, and what is the purpose of the interview?
Thank you. The purpose of the interview, so I should take a step back. If a person has lived in the United States as a permanent resident for 3 years if they're married to a U.S. citizen, or 5 years if they're not married to a U.S. citizen, can apply for U.S. citizenship. And this is a pretty lengthy process. It can take up to a year to process the application. So the application is about 10 pages. There's a fine or a fee that goes with it. And then when the officer from Anchorage comes to town, the interviewee will do fingerprints and then do about a 20 to 30 minute interview and test. And during the interview, they'll have to answer questions on their application. And a lot of the questions are like, what's your address or where do you live now? But some of the questions are a lot more difficult. For example, you'll have to list all the places that you've traveled outside of the U.S. and the exact dates that you've traveled, or you'll have to answer a series of questions. So part of the interview is kind of testing your English. The second part, you have to answer 6 questions correctly, but there's 100 questions on U.S. history and government that you could potentially be asked. You're asked 10, you have to get 6 correct. And a lot of these are fairly easy, like name the colors of the U.S. flag, or where's the capital of the United States, but some of them are more difficult. For example, how many members are in the U.S. House of Representatives, which is 435, or when was the Constitution written, which you would have to study for. You wouldn't necessarily know right off the top of your head. Then there's also a reading part of the test and a writing part of the test. So applicants are asked, they're dictated a sentence, and they're asked to write that sentence down, and they're also asked to read a sentence. So English language skills are important.
Will that officer be doing the interviews this week while he or she is here? In other words, if someone were to come to the information session tonight, would they have time to fill out the application and schedule an appointment for that live interview?
Generally, if someone were to fill out the application this week, no, they wouldn't be able to do the interview. Usually the processing time is like 6 months to a year. But yes, interviews and different things are going on this week. And we've actually had 2 Learning Connections students who have passed their test this week.
So those who are interested should be aware that it is, as you say, a time-consuming process. And it sounds like English, a fairly facile command of English, is going to be required and necessary to even get through the application process.
That's correct.
Now, I know Southeast Regional Resource Center not only does the citizenship and classes, but they also do English classes for those who are learning it. Can you talk a little bit about that, in as much as the language is so important to the process?
Definitely. The Learning Connection offers English as a second language classes in 3 sites in Juneau. There are classes downtown at 210 Ferry Way. There are also classes offered at our Greening Park Center, which is across from Walmart. It's at 1800 Northwood Drive, apartment G49. And there are classes, evening classes at the university on Monday and Wednesday evenings. And the Learning Connection CIRC runs on kind of a school calendar, so we're just wrapping up our classes next week. But classes, evening classes at the university will continue throughout the summer, and English classes and citizenship classes will resume in August or September.
August or September. Great. Thank you for that. So once the individual navigates the application and the interview process and makes it that far, after they pass this test, what more is involved in the process? Obviously, there's a ceremony to culminate that, but what happens in the interim?
So sometimes the natural, you're right, after you pass the interview test, you have to go through what's called a naturalization ceremony, and that you swear your allegiance to the United States, and at that ceremony you become a U.S. citizen. Sometimes that ceremony happens almost immediately after the interview and test, like the same week, I think, but it doesn't always happen that way. It's my understanding that it's going to happen this fall for the people who pass the test this time around. So in the interim, you've passed your test, but you're still a lawful permanent resident and not a U.S. citizen. You're not a U.S. citizen until you actually do the ceremony.
Are there any other requirements other than the residency, which you've mentioned, the admissions process, and then the test, or is that the final hurdle, is getting the accurate number of required answers on that test?
The test is the very last step. There are other requirements. Just the residency isn't enough. There are things like you have to be in the United States for a certain length of time, and you can't have traveled outside of the United States for a certain amount of time, and you have to have good moral character. So there are all sorts of different requirements that you have to meet in order to apply for citizenship.
Is there a definition of good moral character, or do you have someone
There is a definition, and there are certain things that you can't do in order to become a U.S. citizen. So I would suggest, if you're really interested, the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services website has a whole definition of good moral character. I don't know if I can do it justice.
Sure, I understand.
But their website is uscis.gov.
uscis.gov. Is there anything else we should know today in advance of the information session?
Well, I just wanted to let everyone know that the information session is free and open to the public, and it would be nice if we knew you were coming, if you could RSVP. The phone number again is 586-5718, and this is a great opportunity. An officer from Anchorage only comes to Juneau once or twice a year, so it's really special to have the opportunity to get to ask questions directly of a U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services officer.
Heather, thanks for your time. And again, that naturalization and immigration information session is this evening, 5:30 to 6:30 at 210 Ferryway. And if you think you're going to attend, it would be really helpful to give them a call at 586-5718. Thanks again, Heather.
Thanks very much for having me.
you're a fan of Garrison Keillor, here's an opportunity you won't want to miss. KTOO is planning a special 40th anniversary trip to see a live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion on September 21st. Our custom travel package includes 3 nights at the St. Paul Hotel, tickets to the show, ground transportation, a K2 reception, and a visit to Minnesota Public Radio Studios.
Proceeds benefit KTOO. Visit ktoo.org/anniversary to learn more.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. With us now are three adventurous women, Christina Vasquez, AJ Peters, and Jill Weitz. They are one of 5 finalist teams for an Outdoor Magazine Adventure Grant.
This is so cool. I've been wondering ever since I saw you were going to be guests, what is this about?
Christina, this was your brainchild, is that right?
Yeah, we were kind of researching how we could get funding to do these amazing projects, these challenging trips. And when I was online, I looked at Outside Magazine and saw that we had a week left to apply for this grant. And so I got together with these ladies and we applied. And last week, the executive editor called us from Outdoor Magazine to tell us we were in the top 5. So that's kind of how this all got started.
So you're talking about amazing, challenging projects. I need some more details. Specifically, what are you seeking support for?
So we're going to start in Prudhoe Bay, and we are going to bike, hike, and paddle all the way through 3 national parks back to Juneau. And we're going to go through Denali, Wrangell St. Elias, and Gates of the Arctic National Park.
Probably not quite in that order.
No.
I think Gates of the Arctic might be closer to Prudhoe. So talk a little bit about what would something like that cost? I mean, just getting from here to the North Slope is a significant cost, particularly for 3. Talk a little bit about the budget, how you put it together, and what the components are.
Well, I think the 3 main components would be getting there. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of funding to get the 3 of us, our bikes, bike trailers, all of our gear up to Prudhoe Bay. I think the second thing would be food. We're going to have to eat the whole way. And then the third one is going to be the actual gear. I mean, we have the bikes, but we need trailers. We're going to need extra tires. We're going to need bug repellent, toilet paper.
I think you got it covered right there. Food, bug repellent, and toilet paper.
Yep,
you are set. Yeah. Now, how did you women know each other? And how did this idea develop amongst you?
Well, Christina found the grant and then talked to Jill. This is AJ Peters, by the way.
Thank you, AJ.
So Christina and Jill got together and were talking about it, and they needed a third person. And so they know that I really love to shoot video and take photos and write. And so they're like, well, we should have someone to document this. And Christina, you want to talk a little bit about how you and Jill met?
Jill and I met through some other fantastic people in Juneau. I think
we have different memories of when we first met, but we've known each other for about 2 years now. Yeah.
Yeah, and I met AJ at the Archery Center.
Yeah, the swinner.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. AJ and I go back about, 5 years?
5 years.
At least. We both volunteered with SAGA, so we met each other.
And that's what brought you to Juneau?
Yeah, yep. Definitely.
And I assume you all had a love and have a love of the outdoors, or this wouldn't have interested you.
Yes.
What other adventures have turned you on to the outdoors?
Well,
go for it.
Like Jill said, we came up here. I mean, I think all of us got to Alaska because we love being outside. And, of course, this is a very adventurous state. You get to go on world-class hikes every weekend. And so we, I came up here for trail work, and Jill came up here for outdoor work as well. And Christina, you came up for a cannery job, right?
Well, I worked in a cannery in Kodiak a couple years back, but I came up here for the adventure. I came up here with a friend, packed my car, and got on the ferry, and I knew that this was going to be a place that I was going to love, and I was going to travel over Alaska, hopefully, and meet wonderful people that I could take with me on these trips.
Let's talk about the timing. How long have you estimated that this adventure would take once you get the go? And you'll need to take off from here. But what would be the entire length of time you'd need to plan to do this?
at least a month, at least 30 days. We're thinking probably a little bit more than that. We're going to have some rest and weather days, obviously, and we probably wouldn't be able to start until the end of next June, because obviously where Prudhoe Bay is, it's windy, it's cold, there's going to be snow far into the year.
We're kind of waiting to see the determination of the contest before we decide. You know, it's going to depend a lot on what life is happening at that point in time and how quickly or slowly we can enjoy the trip. So,
when do you expect to hear about the next step in the contest and whether or not you ultimately could be the winner?
Well, right now is the voting period, and it's for the next 9 days. It ends on the 28th. You can vote once a day. And then we should hear by the 1st of July who the winner is.
Where do we go to vote?
You can go to outsidemagazine.com and then type in Grant and it should pop up. Or you can just go to Google and type in Outside Grant. It'll pop up. Or you can like us. We have a Facebook page, Alaska Top to Bottom. And you can like our page. We have the link there. We'll be posting multiple times a day.
And we're also on Twitter and we're on WordPress. And those are both AK top to bottom. So, but yeah, just going to Google and typing in Outside Grant. That's how you get there.
Yeah, it'll show the five finalists and their videos, and we're the only women in the competition, which is pretty sweet deal. So we're pretty easy to identify when we're in the videos. Yeah.
You had to make a video. What was it? The three of you talking to the camera about why this is significant for you, or did you go to some spectacular location with a fantastic background to let the outside folks know of your love of the outdoors and adventure? How'd you put that together?
Go ahead, AJ.
And was that you, AJ, I assume, if you're the photographer?
Well, I have the camera. I mean, you have the personality, so I just had to capture it and put it into a video, and so it's kind of funny because, like Christina said, we only had basically a week to put this thing together. So we went out and just goofed around on the beach and talked to each other about what we were excited about with the trip and how much fun it would be. And then I threw together a video in the last 24 hours before the final was due. And we were just like, well, we'll see. Whatever happens, happens. And then that's when Christina got the call on Monday that we were in the top five. So it was pretty crazy, but yeah, mostly just talking about the fact that we come to Alaska to adventure, and we're here in Juneau, which has amazing recreation. We've had a lot of opportunities to get out, but we haven't had a chance to go up to the far north. And if we're in Alaska, we're right here, we might as well explore the far north as well. And so that's where the grant comes in, because none of us could do it without those funds.
Christina, was this in your head prior to seeing the grant? You said you were thinking about exciting, adventurous projects. Was the Prudhoe Bay one at the top of your list, or was that something that you more strongly formulated when you saw the grant opportunity?
We had the idea, but it was one of those ideas that was at the bottom of one of our huge lists of adventures because of funding, because we can't get up there without the money. And so after we thought that we could actually get it, that's when this whole plan formulated and we added in, you know, like we're thinking about which types of hikes we can do, how far we can go, and what we want to see.
So how do you get a bike into Gates of the Arctic?
I think we're going to have to find a stash for our bikes and just use our feet at that point.
I think so, yeah. I've been up there, and I don't think there's a lot of bike paths.
No, definitely. And then, not for road bikes.
The other is, of course, McKinley, you can take your, or Denali, you can take your bike in if you have permission, you know, what, 90 miles in. Yeah. And then what about Wrangell St. Elias? Do you access that via McCarthy, or have you looked at that?
We're actually looking at some flights to go into the interior. Obviously, we wouldn't bring our bikes, but we could do, I mean, we'd be in the heart of the wilderness, and we could do a 5-6 day backpack where not a lot of people have gone.
Yeah. What will be the first step if you do get the grant? What's the first thing you're going to do?
Sleep. Cut off Facebook.
Have you spent a lot of time with the marketing of this?
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll be thanking a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That's very exciting. So just to repeat the key details here, there are a number of ways that folks can vote for your project. either through outsidemagazine.com/grant, I assume. You folks are on Twitter. You've got, is it AK Top to Bottom or Alaska Top to Bottom AK on Facebook?
Either one will bring it up.
Okay. And then are there any other access points to vote for it?
If you go to Twitter, AK Top to Bottom as well.
So AK Top to Bottom will get you there. And WordPress. Sorry, I forgot that last one. And we can vote, each person can vote once a day. And it's based strictly on votes rather than their decision makers at the top, huh?
Right. Yep, exactly. And another point of access, obviously all of our personal Facebooks and Alaskan Brewing Company just put us on their Facebook too. So
as
check
a link.
Them out as well. Yep.
Great. Well,
yep.
I'll repeat your names and tell me if there are any spellings that folks should know if they want to jump on your Facebook page. Christina Vasquez, is that with the CHR?
It is.
All right. And then AJ Peters. I assume they just put in AJ. Okay. And Jill Weitz, W-E-I-T-Z.
Correct.
Well, very exciting, women. You've got a year to think about it if you get it, right? You wouldn't do it for about a year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good for you. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, one other thing. Saturday night is the Only Fools Run at Midnight, and we're going to be down there helping people vote, I guess. If you've got a phone or an iPad, bring it on down, and we'll walk you through it.
You need a big sign
so
that people know what's up. Well, it's very fun to talk to you. Good luck on the effort to get the Outdoor Magazine Adventure Grant, and we'll wish you well right now and just hope for good things.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's take a look.
This is Bird Note. In June, when birdsong is on the wane, many baby birds leave the nest. Some shuffle tentatively along the nearest branch, while others take the big leap. Young great horned owls clamber out of their nest to nearby branches, where they perch, flap their wings, and beg to be fed by their parents. The young owls practice flying by taking short, cautious flights to close by branches or neighboring trees before they depart the nesting area. Young seabirds in nests on high rocky cliffs don't have nearby branches for their test flights and often can't fly. To launch themselves, they tumble off the cliff to land on the water below. Built to bounce, the chicks pop up and swim close to their parents, who continue to feed them. But oh, what a first step! The marbled murrelet is a small, endangered seabird that nests in old coastal forests on the west coast. It has a risky exit strategy. From its nest, high in a tree, the chick must make its first solo flight all the way to the sea, often 10 or 20 miles away. Take the leap yourself. Dive into our website, birdnote.org, to see photos of these remarkable birds and more. I'm Michael Stein.
And I'm Laurie Scandling. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. With us now is Jen Walker. She's going to be talking about two sets of parenting workshops about the approach called Love and Logic. Why don't we talk about first the concepts and the philosophy behind Love and Logic? What makes it different from other parenting approaches? Let's learn about that first, and then we'll talk about the details of the workshop.
Sure. So Love and Logic, it's really hard to put it in a nutshell, but it's generally love your kids enough to let them experience logical consequences. And so a lot of Love and Logic is about, you know, letting your kids make mistakes and learn from those consequences.
Instead of rescuing them?
Yes, very much. Yeah, they call those parents helicopter parents. but it also has a lot to do, they teach a lot of delivery skills, so like ways to say things so that instead of being angry at you, they are angry at the consequence. And so the consequence does the teaching instead of you. And it also allows you to deliver, when kids make mistakes, it allows you to say things in a way that aren't angry. So it helps you stay calm, too. So that's really helpful.
So let's take a real-life example. You find out your kid has skipped school. You get a call from the school. You thought your child was there. He or she wasn't. Role play for a moment. Tell me how that might look and sound as the parent processes this with the young person.
Sure. So the first thing, you know, if the parent had to go in and talk to the school or take time to talk to them at all, they would, part of the consequence is going to be, you know, how the kid pays them back for the time. So an essential part of Love and Logic is delivering empathy with all consequences, and they teach you to use a one-liner. So the one I use with my son right now, he's very little, he's 18 months, is, this is sad, or this is hard. When I was a middle school teacher, I would say, this is such a bummer. And so, you know, the first thing out of your mouth is going to be this empathy, like, oh, this is so hard. And then you would say something like, you know, I spent 20 minutes on the phone with the principal today, and unfortunately that was the time I had budgeted to clean up the doggy doo in the backyard. So, you know, now you're going to, you need to do that for me. So that sort of takes care of, it's kind of teaches the kid, like, when you drain time and energy from me, how are you going to give that back? And then the second part is really, you know, the school has its own consequences for that. And so it's, you know, not getting in the way or interfering with the school's consequences, but showing your kid empathy throughout it, but letting them experience whatever that is. So just a lot of, oh, this is so hard. Yeah, that must really be hard. If you feel like they're not getting it, you can also kind of ask them, how does that feel? if they need help thinking through how to not do the things in the future, Love and Logic also provides techniques for parents to help their kids think themselves out of problems in the future. But instead of telling them how to solve it in the future, you really kind of guide them to think for themselves.
Did you get involved through your profession as an educator, or tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Love and Logic? I know it's a national program.
Yes. So partly it started in Colorado, and so my very first year of teaching, I had the most magnificent principal who said, if you ever get a chance to do a Love and Logic training, do it. It's really fabulous. And didn't really have a chance. I moved up to Anchorage and did have an opportunity there. And so it was 4 years ago that I took my first training, and it really allowed me to change my life. I went from literally my worst year of teaching to my best year of teaching, where I had that Love and Logic in between the 2 years. So it just allowed me to hand the responsibility to the kids and still, you know, completely love and respect them, but it wasn't my fault they weren't getting their homework done, you know, or they were making the mistakes they were. It was just my job to be there to support them and help them figure it out whenever they were ready. And so that mindset just helped me tremendously.
I know you've done some training with school staff here in Juneau. What mm-hmm. schools are looking at Love and Logic right now and seeking training for their staff?
Thunder Mountain High School has done training with me, and it's really exciting. The staff is very much on board and really energetic about it. And then I've also done training with, you're going to have to excuse my pronunciation, but the
Yokosuka Dakahiti Alternative High School. Well, I just predicted that that might
that
be a word
it.
that might be challenging.
Right. So, which is quite different because it's quite a bit smaller staff, so it's a little bit more intimate training, but they've had me back several times to kind of reinforce some of the skills that we're working on, which is really great as well.
Love and Logic, as I recall, has a very in-depth training series, two strands for educators and one for parents. Is that right? Each one is a little bit different?
Yes, yes. Additionally, they have one for early childhood parenting, but the ones that I'm an independent facilitator of are called Parenting the Love and Logic Way, which includes early childhood, but it goes all the way through teenagers. In fact, I use some of the techniques with my parents. And then, yes, a classroom skills one.
When you say I'm a former educator, so I know when you say your parents, what you mean are the parents of your students.
Oh, yes, I did use it then, but no, I mean literally like
your
dad.
Your actual mom and dad.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Totally use the technique.
And are they shaping up?
Actually, yeah.
Consistency. It
yes.
makes a difference.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the training opportunities here in Juneau with you, Jen, for Love and Logic.
Sure.
It looks like you've got a series coming up in July,
mm-hmm.
and which is right around the corner, and then September. Why don't you give us the particulars on those two training sessions?
Sure. So Parenting the Love and Logic Way is 6 2-hour sessions. This next one starts July 1st. It'll be Mondays and Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. for 3 weeks, so July 1st through the 17th. Trainings so far have always been at the Juneau Family and Birth Center, and this one, because it's an evening one, includes dinners included in the cost. Child care is included in the cost. And then you also get a workbook with the training and then another just like Love and Logic book. So the cost for this training coming up is a little more because it does include training, but it's $210 a couple or $180 per person.
And that's 6 sessions for 2 hours, Monday and Wednesday evening, 6 to 8 p.m., and a meal and child care are included.
Correct.
Great. And should someone reserve a spot?
Yes, yes. I also want to mention that educators, corrections officers, pediatricians can attend trainings for, well, normally it's for free, but when there's dinner, it's $50, so extremely reduced price. And so, but those people need to register as well. Because I do have child care, I just want to make sure I have enough child care, and because there's dinner provided, I need to know, you know, how many meals I'm making. So, yes, please register. Registration will be at joyfulparentingjuno.com. And, of course, today my website is bonking on me. So if you have trouble going there today, try again tomorrow and it should be fixed. But that's joyfulparentingjuno.com.
And what about the September, October sessions?
Sure. My fall sessions will start September the 8th. Those are going to be on Sunday afternoons from 3 to 5 p.m., so from September 8th through October the 13th, again at the Juneau Family Birth Center.
Child care provided?
Yep, child care will be provided. We're not going to do meals on that, so the cost will be closer to like... sorry, I'm doing math in my head.
Pause.
Oh, 130 per person and 190 for a couple.
All right, or 190 per couple. Jen, thanks for the time and the brief look at Love and Logic. Two training sessions coming up. You can learn more at joyfulparentingjuno.com, a session in July, and one, again, that will begin in September. The July session will be two evenings a week, 6 to 8 p.m., Monday and Wednesday. Beginning September 8th, there will be weekly sessions on Sunday 3 to 5. Both will be held at the Birth Center, and child care is provided. Thanks again, Jen. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Here's a piece of good advice. Think it over once or twice. Parents, though they don't deserve it, remember they're grown-ups, a difficult stage of life. They're apt to be nervous and overexcited, confused from their daily storm and strife. Just keep in mind, though it sounds odd, I know, most parents once were children long ago. Incredible. So treat them with patience and sweet understanding in spite of the foolish things they do. Someday you may wake up and find you're a parent too.
Well, thanks for joining me this afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. Tomorrow, Shona Strasser will be here. We'll learn about this weekend's Gold Rush Days at Savico Park. International burlesque star Lily Verlaine will give us a preview of upcoming performances in Juneau. Claire Richardson will be here to talk about Saturday's Kennedy Street Centennial Celebration. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That's Writer's Almanac, Music, and More. That's tomorrow on Juneau afternoon at 3. Weather calls for increasing cloudiness beginning tonight. Temperatures will stay between 65 and 70 for the next few days, but mostly cloudy is in the forecast with a chance of rain. This is KTOO-FM. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1. In the Valley and Auk Bay is 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in at K201 AM. 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. Here KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. And in Juneau, you can receive KTOO on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, KXLL at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
Here in Berlin, here in Europe, our values won. Openness won. Tolerance won. And freedom won.
In Germany, President Obama urges cuts in nuclear arsenals. For Wednesday, June 19th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. In this hour, how Senator Mark Udall of Colorado would change government surveillance programs.
I think we should err on the side.